Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news, Monday evening, and Edwin is back once again. Hi Edwin, how are you going?
All I can say, Martin, is wow, wow, wow. And if you want me to say it backwards, I can, and that's without any
magic. Wow, 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 yes. A lot going on.
Can you get any better? I mean, who said that political crime, immigration, doesn't pay, hey? So there's some scary numbers out there. Banks are making huge profits. And we're also going to touch on the TP index, the Tom Panos index, because he had a woeful Saturday. So now all of a sudden, there's a tranche of listings. I'm trying to work that out where and find out. But I do have an idea. It could be down in Campbelltown, in the Housing Commission ghettos down there. But who knows? Who knows? But a lot happening, Martin. A lot happening.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, the RBA lifted, as we suspected they might last week. And the inflation statistics were actually pretty concerning, not least because the true story was, of course, that it was services inflation, right, which is really the critical issue. And just on that, it is interesting just to look at the insurance and financial services shooting up, household services shooting up. The prospect of the inflation rate coming down is pretty unlikely. And of course, it's worth highlighting the fact that not only that, but the rental statistics. This was actually one that I thought was quite interesting, showing just how low the vacancy rate is in Australia relative to peers, which means there's going to be a lot more pressure on rental. And rental, of course, is one of the elements that goes into the CPI. So, you know, a lot of people are feeling relatively dischuffed with what's going on at the moment. No surprise on that. And of course, there was an interesting article over the weekend, which was again showing that young Aussies really are saying, I can't afford to buy, I can't afford a house, despite the fact that I've got a real decent wage. And we'll touch on that a bit later, because I made a post on that as well. And this is a really big deal. I mean, there are so many things going on. And yet, migration, migration, migration. It's all about migration, isn't it?
Yeah, look, it is. Going over all those post information, all the stuff that came over the weekend, I was just reflecting. I've been talking about almost two decades now, posting things on LinkedIn and other platforms, the mainstream media have quoted me a lot over the years. But I've always had a keen eye on the rental scenarios. We have had periods in the past where in certain parts of Sydney the rental vacancies have gone down to 1.5. They've sat under 2. They've sat under 2%, but nothing like it is now, and definitely not. We haven't seen an era where we've brought in so many migrants all at the same time, basically, which is putting that pressure. But outside of historical articles and quotes and things that I've done and posts that I've done and videos that I've done, outside of that, the most recent things that you and I have been speaking about was that the fix was in 2019.
Yes.
This is before the pandemic, before the cron, before all this shit that's going on, before WEF popped its head up, and before the everything else that seems to be capturing the attention of most of the people. We were speaking about, and this is what I keep on saying over and over again. All these things that we around are peripheral. That are happening to us, like even this conflict in the Middle East. It's not tickle and giggle shit. But I'd say, what are they trying to distract us from? What are they really trying to distract us from? With everything else that goes on. So look, the fix was in 2019. Then we got the cron. But you and I were already bringing it to people's attention. We already started talking about. The post that I was sharing on DFA and on the channel, yeah, Walk the World for years as to the conditions. And I was saying, this is what happens. These are the conditions, what happens. This is what people get away with. All the shit that people get away with. When I say people, I'm talking about landlords and property management teams get away with when they put in their house people into makeshift accommodation, garages that have been turned into so-called granny flats and the like. But I've been doing it for a while, but it was well and truly in 2019, and here we are, Martin. I mean, here we are with everything that's been brought up now. Show me one subject matter that you and I haven't spoken about months ago, even years ago, that since 2019 that is playing out now that we were warning the people and we were trying to educate the people and we were saying to them, watch this space. Things are only going to get better before they can get worse.
Well, it is interesting, Edwin. I mean, I made some further updates to my models over the last couple of months. And the reason for that is that this migration bulge that's now come in, I mean, it's a huge migration bulge, 500,000 plus. What that is doing is actually, it's definitely putting a floor under house prices. Not uniformly. So I've updated my modeling to take account of that. And of course, the question now is, will they keep that tap wide, wide open? Or will, in fact, other things come to the fore to the point where they'll change the strategy? Now, of course, if they do change the strategy, then that's going to be a big issue. And it's interesting, in the recent central monetary policy, there was a lot of discussion about migration and did migration force inflation up? And they sort of hedged their bets a little bit in that particular document. But if you think about it, a proportion of the inflationary measurement is to do with rentals. Rentals, of course, is to do with how many people want somewhere to live. And of course, if you actually have high migration, that's going to put inflation pressure up. So the bottom line, I think, is that inflation is also being driven higher because of this migration. And it's interesting, there was an article over the weekend again showing that the voters are pretty gloomy as the outlook worsens. A lot of people are now saying that things are going to get worse. Only 8% of voters expect the economy to improve over the next 3 months, and 50% believe it could get worse, deepening the gloom about the national outlook when mortgage payments are soaring from higher interest rates. And it's interesting that if you go to the detail there, you can see that really support for Albo is drifting away. And what's quite interesting is that a lot of people now saying, well, really, we can't see a way forward from this point. So whilst the fix is in at one level, at another level, Edwin, there are a lot of people who are really now very much dischuffed with what's going on. And politically, the question is, will they have to change direction or will they just keep peddling the property story a bit further and bring more people in and try and keep the momentum going? That's really the question now.
Look, you just have to follow the Tom Panos index, right? So that's how you keep up with the trends. Sarcastic.
Yeah, but the Tom Panos index goes all over the place, right? So depending on which week you look at it.
Yeah, look, like I said, he's a great motivational speaker, great auctioneer. Love going toe to toe with him at auctions and everything. It's all entertaining, but at the end of the day, you've got to decipher and you've got to follow the numbers, because once you follow the numbers, you end up to where the money is, right? So and to understand his post, you've got to really understand the motivation, which we've shared before. And if people want to see further as to what I talk about, why I'm calling bullshit on his call in Sydney, that is, I'm willing to truly, and I said it to him, post it to him, and I'll message him later on in the week and I'll say, mate, show me where the numbers are that you're seeing that they're coming up. But look, outside of that, Martin, the other, you asked the question, you brought up the articles with regards to what the consensus is, what the general population are saying now and everything. But the question is, do the politicians really want to change, right? We had we had ScoMo and Partners Real Estate, and that was going great guns. I mean, Albo and Co Real Estate Group. I mean, they're really taking it to another. They're really taking it to another level, right? So, and it, all it seems to me is like what we shared last week was, which is it's becoming more and more apparent that every level of government, from your local government to, you know, state and federal government, at every level of government, it's a great industry. Seriously, if you had to live your life again, I want to come back as worst case scenario, a premier of a state, and preferably the premier of Victoria. And then from there I'll shoot to federal politics, because it's easy peasy, it's easy wheezy Japanesey. Because we're talking about some of the politicians spending $350 for a bacon and eggs roll, traveling in the traveling allowances. They're claiming $350 for a bacon and egg roll and a cappuccino. Man, with that kind of change, I mean, why wouldn't you want to be a politician? And then on top of that, which we spoke about last week, right? The industry, the political industry, and now we get the local pundits, the local first time home buyers, those that want to get into the market, those that are striving to get back into the market, the local Aussies are just getting smacked in the face again with the banks. So look, you either come back in your next lifetime as a politician at any level, because you're going to make it's ka-ching. You're going to make a lot of money, or you come back as a banker. They're my two wishes now, because the banks are making a motor and they're really throwing it in your face. This is the scary shit, man. It's really throwing it in your face. Nobody cares. Nobody cares. Simple as that. We're out on our own, and that's the way it's going to be. And it's going to be like this for years, folks, unfortunately. Because we're going to talk about construction as well. We said at the beginning of the year that things are going to get worse before they get better. And as a matter of fact, things have got to break before we can get better. And I guess when I was starting to say that at the beginning of the year, I'm sort of now coming to the realization subconsciously what it means to me now. And I'm calling a revolution. Before shit gets better, because there's no other way that the government is going to listen to what the people have to say. They haven't been listening. They're not going to listen, and they continue to spin everything around to cushion their lifestyles, and everybody else pays more by way of inflation, taxes, and every other cost that we get lumbered with, and subsidies and the like. So unfortunately, this is where we are, Martin.
Absolutely, Edwin. And just on the banks, astonishing profits that they announced, as you can see here, massive amounts. CBA, $10.2 billion, NAB, $7.7 billion, ANZ, $7.4 billion, and Westpac, $7.2 billion. And what's interesting about that is that, of course, they benefited from the interest rate rises, helped their margins. Of course, they've also got this massive amount of money parked via the Term Funding Facility at the RBA, and the RBA is now paying them more than 4.2% for money held at the bank. That money, of course, is our money. So we are giving the banks about $1 billion in extra profit just because of the way that was done. It's nuts, absolutely astonishing. And then the other thing just worth saying, that of course the banks are now looking to cut repayments for stressed borrowers, right? Because we know that there are a lot of people who are really struggling. What this is now doing, of course, is it's allowing the banks to effectively extend and pretend, so they can actually say, no, things are nowhere near as bad as some people are saying. It's interesting that some of the analysis that's been done, I do my own mortgage stress. In fact, I'm running a show tomorrow, which will go into that in more detail. Roy Morgan have come out with a very significantly increased number of borrowers in mortgage stress. And also from the ANU, they've also done some work too. So there's lots of data now showing that people are getting caught. But the banks are sort of wobbling this around and saying, well, if you're in difficulty, talk to us, we'll help. it's all about extend and pretend, Edwin, but it's not solving the fundamental issue. So you're right. Something has to break and break substantially before we actually can move on, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's right. In the meantime, the question is who's suffering, Martin? Mm. Who's suffering? The people that are suffering are the ones that are trying to get into the market. I mean, this is bad policy. This is bad calls by, as I said, by both parties, the Libs and the Labs at a state and the federal level. They can blame shift. They can do all they want. Yeah, one blames the other. I go back as far as the deregulation of the industry when Carr was appointed and SEP 65 and everything else that went on from there. And we just keep on going and going and going. At the end of the day, people have got to realise that the Libs and the Labs are the left and the right wing of the of the same vulture. So we're going to get pecked at. We're going to get chewed and spat out. And unfortunately, the majority don't learn. And we haven't been holding the parliamentarians, the politicians, to account to their promises. If making promises before an election and not fulfilling those promises was a crime, shit, can you imagine? I would want to become a jailer. I would want to become a jailer because that's another business, right? But this is the whole thing, Martin. This is the whole thing. You speed. You go 5 kilometers over the speed limit. You get fined. If you don't pay your fine, you get your registration gets taken out. And I mean, there's all these repercussions, right? But with all this waste and all these promises that the governments make at all levels, they walk away scot-free. And as a matter of fact, they walk away with great little pensions. And then after that, they can work as consultants and earn twice as much as the $350,000 pensions per year that they get. In perpetuity until they cark it. This is where we're at, and hence the reason why I say, expect a revolution, because that's really that's when shit's really going to break, and that's when perhaps something things are going to change. I don't know, Martin, but. And then you've got the stuff that the Witcher chatters are talking about, and it's really not, in my opinion, not great news, not good news for the first home buyers. In one sense, it appears on surface, on face value, Albo and Co are making inroads, and we're going to see things happening with our exports again, and it's going to be a little bit of relief. But at what cost? What is the price that we're paying for all this? Rather than decoupling ourselves from China, we seem to be wanting to go back in bed with this. But when you look at the underlying motive, I guess you call me cynical, call me otherwise, whatever you want to call me. But I always bring it back to property and what it's doing to the local Aussies. The youngsters that want to get in, even want to get into and have a comfortable rental environment, they can't because of what's going on.
Yeah, and this is interesting. We might just play a little bit from the Insiders program, because Spearsy interviewed Penny Wong, and there was a very interesting little piece where basically she was sort of trying to avoid the question, which to my mind does beg a very, very significant question. Let's play that clip.
China and Australia, after the meeting, reaffirmed their support for the comprehensive strategic partnership between the two countries. Can you just clear this up for viewers? Are we strategic partners with China or strategic competitors?
Now, come on, David, you're better than that. You know that a comprehensive strategic partnership was signed by, I think it was, Tony Abbott. Mm. So this is a diplomatic term for a relationship. So, and you have a more sophisticated understanding of the relationship than to ask me a question like that. We know that there are areas where we can cooperate, and we should. We want to. There are areas where we disagree, and we should do so clearly and consistently and calmly. And we should continue to engage, because China is a consequential country in our region. So it matters for Australia's security, whether it's its economic security or national security more broadly, for us to engage.
So there you go. So the question is, What's really going on, Edwin? What's really going on?
Well, look, the mainland China, the mainland Chinese are loving this comprehensive strategic partnership, right? And they can see that they can see for what it is. Mm. Now, it's not only the mainland Chinese, the WeChat chatterers, but it's also the local chatterers collectively are saying saying the same thing, which you and I discussed a while ago. Last year, we were talking about different things when we were trying to sort of get back into bed when our government was trying to get back into bed with the CCP, with Xi. And what we got was, what we said back then was, and what the WeChat chatterers are saying again, is, listen, the middle class got wiped out. Pretty much the middle class got wiped out in mainland China. And the people that, before the pandemic, the people that were the biggest consumers of what we're going to be sending over there, the lobsters, the seafood, the wine, everything else, including Lionel, obviously all those that enjoyed the fine dining and all the manufacturing that took possession of our ore and did something with it. Well, guess what? A lot of them got wiped out. So the mainland China, the mainland chatter, it's a great position because remember what we said at the beginning of the year, Martin. We said that remember when China was pretty much opening up its doors for students, for tourists to travel abroad. Remember that? And we said back then that because things were so hot with regard to the rental market here, because things were so hot in with regard to what was happening around with housing, predominantly the rental market, we said it needed a distraction in order for something to then Australia to say, oh wow, look at us, everything's okay now. We're going to welcome the tourists from China, because from the China's point of view, they're ready to go, they're ready to come, the tourists are ready to come. And you and I know, and we've spoken in detail based on what the WeChat chatters have told us, we know what happens when they come. We end up with this increase in ghost migrants, right? And our followers know what we mean by ghost migrants. So, and they're waiting. They are waiting, man. Now, this trip that Alvo's taken over there, they know, both the mainland WeChat chatterers and the local chatterers, they know that the biggest consumers of these fine food, they got wiped out in the pandemic. So there's very little gain that we're going to have. But you know what? What does it really mean? It basically means, as I said, we're going to be giving them lobsters, we're going to be giving them vino, we're going to be giving iron ore. And what are they going to give us in return? They're going to give us university students, they're going to give us tourists, they're going to give us pretty much cheap labour, which is what I believe, what I feel, and what these governments have proven to really want, is the cheap labour by way of these ghost migrants. And I'm calling it, that's my personal perspective, that's my, stay me, whatever you want to do. But that's how it plans out. This is what the WeChat chatterers are saying themselves. Hence the reason why they've been preparing for the second wave, because they knew back then when we spoke about why are the WeChat chatterers buying investment properties in Sydney, predominantly in the outer skirts, in areas where they didn't buy investment properties in the past. They seem to have been going out further afield, further out, even in some of the regional areas, even as far as Lithgow and also Gosford and the like, where they didn't venture before, because they knew that sooner than later there was going to be look over here moment, and whilst we look over there and get distracted, whooshka, all of a sudden, Albo's all smiles and the government's all smiles, and look at us, we're welcoming new tourists so that our hospitality industry can grow once again, our tourism industry can grow once again, and obviously, of course, there'll be more income into tertiary education bodies, and look at how wonderful we are. But at the end of the day, what does it really represent? What does it mean? What are the WeChat chatterers looking for? Yeah, they'll pay they'll pay to do a bogus course in a bogus tertiary education and education body. They'll come as tourists and then disappear. But what's their main motivation? One, to get away from China, and two, to come over and park their money in our real estate, and we're just handing it over hand over fist. This is what I'm saying, Martin. It's not, things aren't getting better by just because they're going to be buying our lobsters, and taking our vino. Things are going to get worse than it, predominantly in the Sydney market. I would dare say, based on the figures that we're going to talk about, the numbers that we're going to talk about, and what's happening in Melbourne, it could also turn things back around. In Melbourne from the path that it's currently heading.
Absolutely. Well, it is, you know, quite a concerning story, because of course what it means is that the potential property purchasing floodgates will continue to come, but not uniformly, right? So you've made the point that maybe the death roll will continue in Melbourne simply because of what's gone on with the numbers there.
Yeah, and this is exactly right. This is, so right now the focus from all investment groups, whether the WeChat chatterers, the local chatterers, overseas chatterers, whatever, it appears to be and concentrated in Sydney, right? And we said that, a few weeks ago, we said that there was a call from the WeChat chatterers, and they're basically saying, get out of Melbourne, right? And we're seeing these numbers. So they're out. They're generally out of there. They're getting out. That's a continual chatter across the investment platforms that Dusty monitors. The local WeChat chatter investment groups that Dusty monitors on WeChat. They are seriously out. And you can see by the trend, the numbers there. Those numbers are staggering. Those numbers are really climbing high, and they're getting higher. And we're more or less getting towards, say, what we would otherwise see a retraction in numbers, because seasonally people would take properties off the market because they don't want to have open houses during the break. But we're seeing the opposite happening there in Melbourne. So that's a chatter among the local chatterers. Obviously, another thing that's encouraging the local chatterers, and hence the reason why I say that they're looking further afield as well in your Sydney markets. They're looking at your outskirts, your southwestern regions, your western regions, is because obviously I didn't send you the link or the snapshot of the where Alvo's made this the call that I was made to basically welcome the Cook Islanders, part of the Cook Islanders. Can't remember exactly where from. The article spoke about what part of the Cook Islands he was in that referred to. But predominantly, it's another 20, 30, 40,000 migrants that are going to be looking into coming into Australia, because he's opened the doors in the name of climate change. And trying to help them out, so I guess the logic there is if Australia takes on another 20, 30,000, 40,000 workers, open the doors to the Cook Islands, that means that there's if they weigh on average 90 kilos per person, so that would the Cook Islands would lift from the sea. That seems to be the logic perhaps Alba is looking at. I don't know, I can't think of anything else, right? Less people in the Cook Islands, more people in Australia, so the Cook Islands will rise. I don't know, because it's all in the aim of the name of climate change, but we're gonna get another 30, 40,000. And where are these people where are the communities, right? The communities are in your Blacktown LGAs, your communities are in your Campbelltown areas. That's where the Islander communities are, and they wanna be close together because it's a community. We said a while ago that we're seeing this shift, we're seeing this polarizing of communities all over Sydney, in the Sydney region, and it's becoming very well defined, whereas Multiculturalism was supposed to mix everybody in, but it's exactly, you know, the opposite is happening now. And because of this, the Wiltshire Charterers are looking for properties in those areas again, in those, you know, further afield, going back to, because they knew this stuff, Martin. They're very well across these investment groups, local investment groups are well across the immigration policies. And this is what we share. And I share this with our followers and our viewers, because it's, I think it's, we've got, you know, front row seats to look at the market trends, and you would agree with me that a lot of what the Wiltshire Charterers have said over the years, they've come to pass, and they've been ahead of the ahead of what the mainstream media have been calling, and hence the reason why we listen to them very, very carefully, because obviously you got to follow what the trend is. And at the end of the day, I keep on saying over and over again, and that is that Sydney's not a big market. So, you know, 500 listings off the for sale ledger on Domain is a big deal. Likewise, when you've got 1,000 piling on like they have, over 2 weeks in Melbourne, what's happening here? Why? But it's going to take the mainstream media a few more weeks, perhaps another month or two to realize what's really happening. But the Wiltshire Charterers are ahead of these calls.
Yes, and just to be clear, I think the agreement was with one island, which has a population, I think, of 11,000. But the point is, it could be the first of a number of such agreements where effectively we increase the migration into Australia from that particular corner of the world. And guess what? A lot of those people would be prepared probably to work for lower wages than local Australians. So it's part of the same old, same old. It's part of the same old fix. It's turn the dial up even further and bring more people in. But the consequences are pretty dramatic. And of course, already, the latest, as I said earlier on, I made a post on housing affordability over the weekend. CBA did some modelling, and they basically took the assumption that there were people who had two median incomes, so two average incomes, to buy an average property. And in Sydney, as well as many other areas, it wasn't possible. And in fact, I took that analysis further because, of course, they've made some massive assumptions in terms of the average household income, which is in reality a lot lower than the one that they've used in their modelling. So housing affordability stinks is very much my take on what's going on at the moment, and nothing that we've discussed so far will do anything other than make housing affordability even worse. And in fact, even the HIA made the point that the rise in the cash rate was hitting the new homes market. Not surprising, because of course a lot of people are trying to get into the market and are looking at some of the new home land packages, etc., etc. So it's really a mess. And the point I think we've got to come back to is that the story here is a deliberate set of policies. This isn't an accident. This is actually policy. And if you want to sort of, you know, take that further, the story about the infrastructure splurge exacerbating housing shortage, they're making the point that the government-funded road and rail projects are competing for tradies and construction materials, crowding out the residential construction market and compounding Australia's inflation problem, the Reserve Bank warned. So, you know, even the RBA is saying, Houston, we have a problem. But of course, it's the big Australia, pull the lever right hard, far over. And as you say, Albo Real Estate and Co. Are actually, they're actually reaping the benefits, aren't they? So it's a real mess.
Look, it is. Going back to the, going back to the potential migration from those islands, right, to save them from sinking. The good thing with that, Martin, is that those guys do want to work in the construction industry. So I'm happy on that, right? They're great form workers. They can carry a lot of bricks. That's the muscle that we need in the, at least that's a point in the right direction, right? Because we got to call it as it is, right? So that is a good call. Yeah, for whatever reason, I'm saying, look, that is a good call. And we need more more of these guys come because they do want to get their hands dirty. They are workers, and you know, it's great. With regard to the infrastructure, that splurge and what was happening. Remember what we were saying at the beginning of the year, Martin? Remember how we were the other groups, apart from the investment groups that Dusty monitors, that we also monitor the trading groups. Remember when we were talking about how there was a lot of infrastructure being in ourselves, how our the people, our clients that we're helping to do the helping them to you know, with renovations, we were losing tradespeople, we were losing painters and gyprockers, and things got delayed a bit, and it's only now that the mainstream media are talking about again what the witch hat chatterers were already telling us and showing us. And this is why I made that call at the beginning of the year. I said that, yeah, regardless of however many people, however many migrants the government brings in, they're bringing in the wrong governments if they want to reduce the costs of the construction costs for one or two reasons. The one is the people that are coming in don't want to work in the building industry, other than our new people that are coming in from the Cook Islands, right? So the majority don't want to work in the construction industry. And that was one. And the second thing I said was, along those lines, was the fact that the builders and the trades, the contractors, once you start charging a certain fee, you don't want to reduce your fees. You may be paying your subordinates a bit less, but the project still costs a lot. And we could go, we could sort of extrapolate that and we could say, why is that? Well, two things. One is because there's a lot of building companies that have been going bust,
yep.
Right? And that got caught up with the pandemic and got caught up with bills and got caught up in fixed price contracts. The materials just skyrocketed and went through the roof. And hence the reason why I said, at the beginning of the year, I said, expect construction costs to go up by a further 20% by the end of the year. And they have been, and we pretty much, and I think we've in a lot of areas, we've exceeded that to the point that there was another report that I didn't share with you. I didn't send you the screenshot. And that is, to say that, because of this infrastructure splurge, concrete has gone up by 50% this year. That's staggering. That is staggering. So we're losing builders because HIA again, they themselves said that about 50, perhaps even more percent of the industry, first and second tier companies, building companies, are trading insolvent. That is scary shit, Martin. That is really scary. And I know, and I've shared as well, our discussions with a number of liquidators that I've worked with over the years. Even before knowing the ones that I've been introduced by the accountants that I've been introduced by the WeChat chatterers, we know that the fact that the group that's chasing the biggest amount of money across all the trades companies and building companies and everything is the ATO, and they need to reel in a lot of this revenue that's out there that they want to bring in. Why? Because of this, obviously, this infrastructure splurge that we've got. Somebody's got to pay for the infrastructure, regardless of the fact that state and federal have pulled back a lot of infrastructure spend. So we're in a mess. We are really, really in a mess. In some parts, you could say we're in a quagmire, and we just don't know how to get out of it. And I don't think the government knows, other than trying to pay themselves more money. And they think that by paying themselves more money, they're going to come up with better ideas than the bullshit that they've come up with in the last 2.5 decades. I don't know if that's going to, they think that that's going to fix the problem. If they pay themselves more, they might come up with some better ideas, Martin. I don't know. But it's really confusing what's going on out there. what they tell us they're doing as to why they're doing it, but it's counterproductive to with the end results. They're not there, but they keep on doing the same shit over and over and over again, expecting to things get better tomorrow. I mean, it's crazy stuff.
Definition of insanity, isn't it? Is doing the same thing and expecting a different outcome, right? So they're doing the same thing and expecting something different to happen. It won't. We're going to see the same trends continuing. And as you say, the whole issue of the construction costs rising very significantly, which, by the way, feeds into the inflation number again. So another uptick in terms of inflation because of the cost of construction. Plus the fact that we know that the supply of property is way below where it needs to be to mesh with the high migration that's coming in. So that's going to put more support under the property sector selectively. So, yeah, it is a mess. And I don't think there's any willingness amongst politicians to, one, recognise that they created the problem in the first place, and two, to try different things. I mean, you know, it's all about lip service and announceables, but nothing that actually really makes a difference. And meanwhile, of course, Edwin, well, the numbers just, you know, they don't lie, do they? So if you look at the story in Sydney, this is as at the 13th, 17419, 17,419 properties. Guess what? Last week, they were listed at 17514. So the listings in and around the Sydney region are dropping, which is, I suppose, what you might expect at this time of year, given we're coming up towards the city season.
Yeah, and also added to that is what I've been saying is the uncertainty, the bigger uncertainty in what's happening abroad, what's happening in the Middle East, what's happening. I mean Ukraine's almost forgotten now, but more than likely something else is going to pop up abroad. So there's a lot of uncertainty. So I think I'm a believer that the numbers in Sydney are going to continue to retract because of that, and it feeds itself in that, because once there's less time to have less listings on market, then people don't want to sell, because again we go back to the rental numbers. There's no rentals available for them to even wait renting a place locally, because people that sell want to stay locally. They don't want to retire 40 kilometers away, 50 kilometers away from where they spent the last 40, 50, 60 years of their lives. And they want to stay close to family. So that's just the trend in Sydney. And look, regardless of what our mate Tom says, I can't see it. I really can't see it. You might have to look at a specific suburb. I know that Tom does a lot of auctions with a lot of independent agents and agencies, and a lot of them are in the fringes of Sydney. I know that. So it could be just having a go at that, but also the other thing is when you've got this, when you've got the high expectations of vendors as well, and in that, as I said in another post, replying to Tom, as I said, we've really got a Mexican standoff. So we've got agents that are desperate to get listings, so they'll tell the owner they'll get them $1 million when the house is only worth 900, but they'll tell them they'll get them $1 million. And when it comes day of the auction, they get offers around 880 to 910. Obviously the vendor's not going to take it because they say, shit, man, what you told me was worth 900. So we've got this Mexican standoff. People don't want to pay more. Vendors don't want to sell for less. So they'll pull their head back in the shell, because we're getting closer to seasonal retraction anyway. But I think people are taking it a bit earlier in Sydney.
Yeah, but as you say, in Sydney, now if you compare that with Melbourne, and we briefly showed the numbers, but let's look at them in slightly more detail, because, you know, the Melbourne story is, well, ridiculously different, right? So on the 30th of October, it was 25,499. Jump forward to the 6th, it was 26,142, and if you jump forward to the 13th, it's 26,541. So Melbourne is going in the opposite direction to Sydney in spades.
Yeah, look, it is. And the other interesting thing there, Martin, is the thousand extra listings on market that we're noticing coming into staying on the Melbourne numbers. The predominantly are houses. Mm. So apartments haven't really moved. It's really the houses that have that they're really creeping up, and on top of that, we've also started looking at the land for sale. So there's and it all goes back to the government policies. It all goes back to the minimum standards that they have to meet now. I mean, they're still they've got another month or so to run before the VCAT start taking the property managers to task. So we've got all these issues there, and then the call was, 3-4 weeks ago from the WeChat chatterers here in Sydney, from the local chatterers, predominantly here in Sydney, saying get out of Melbourne, get out of Melbourne. And this is where we see this huge numbers pile in over the last few weeks in Melbourne. It's going to be to watch this space moment as to what's happening in Melbourne. And this is where, but you never know, Martin. You never know. Look, all he needs now is for the current Premier of Victoria to get on the plane and go and have a meeting with head office over in China and say, hey, listen, we need more people. You need to persuade more people to come to Melbourne. I think that's the only way that the Melbourne property market can be saved. Because if this trend continues into it's almost the beginning of the locomotive taking up speed in the last ramp before the bridge that's a little bit wobbly, right? So I don't know. I'm just watch this space.
Absolutely. And just looking at the auctions, so these are the stats for the 18th of November, looking ahead, and the 11th of November. And you can see there that the auctions are a little bit more momentum, I suppose, but the clearance rates weren't particularly flash either, were they?
No, because again, we've got this Mexican standoff. We've got this high expectations. Agents are buying these things. So, and again, these are the numbers. I tell you what the numbers for me are attractive. Catch my attention is you look at Melbourne. How there's a lot more activity once again in terms of wanting to get out quicker, right? And this is why you've got you've almost got, as of next week's as of Saturday the 18th auction, the numbers that are currently listed on Domain as of today that are going to auction, that have been pre-programmed to go to auction on the 18th, that's almost 400 or almost 400 more listings going to auction. So there's a lot more people wanting to get out quicker, because obviously that is a strategy. The auction campaign, one of the strategies is to get out of the market a lot quicker than potentially being under private treaty, particularly in a market that's going to be floundering or waning because there's more and more listings coming on board. Overall, the numbers are staggering. And, that's an interesting number. It'll be interesting to see over the next couple of weeks what happens to those numbers, if there was that urgency here in Sydney for vendors, I would dare say that we should be closer to 1100 ourselves, but we're not. Here we are, and that's my interesting takeaway from the auctions. And as you know, I don't hang my hat on the one indicator as to what to check what the property market is doing in Sydney across the board, like many others do.
Yeah, and just to make the point that the 4th of November auctions, of course, the Victorian one was way down because of the long weekend there and the horse race. So that may have a little bit of impact, but probably only at the margin. It is worth, I think, also just highlighting, Edwin, that if we look at the rental sector in Sydney on the 13th, we had 9549 properties for rent in the Sydney region, 9549. And on the 6th, it was 9051. So there's a little bit of an uptick in terms of rental property in the Sydney region.
Yeah, so still below the 2022 numbers, but it's still a bit of relief. The homes, the rental homes are the lowest I've ever seen. But again, going back to where we are to the current policies and where we are, those you know, 8,000 or between 8 and 9,000 were the rental numbers in the, you know, either one of the Blacktown LGAs or the Parramatta LGA back in, you know, back in 2015, 2016. It's gobsmacking to see this. But, you know, there's still a lot of pain. Still a lot of pain out there. It'll be interesting to see what's happening in the Melbourne. I don't follow the Melbourne rental numbers at all, not even for the show. But I think this, for some reason, there's a lot of, but then again, there is a lot of pain there. But it's really only because it's easier to sell a property in these sort of markets that there's a lot of competition in terms of listings to sell a property that doesn't have a tenant. So, and a lot of vendors have, you know, opt out of, renewing leases because they want to get out and they want to sell the properties a lot quicker and have less issues with fixed-term tenancies as well. So, unfortunately. And there's been a little bit of an uptick in the national numbers, but nothing to really write about. Overall, it's, again, things sort of slow down from people don't necessarily really want to move or shift. We're getting to the end of the year where, you know, once we tick into December, it almost like it's an automatic, it's as many call the silly season. We get some activity in the first week, then things just start waning and slowing down from the second week onwards.
Absolutely. And as we come to the end of the show, Edwin, your tip for the week, it's an oldie but a goodie.
Look, and the reason why I bring this up, yes, it is an old one. It is something the reason why I bring it up again is because I just had firsthand experience today. And that is, you really need to inform your conveyancer and your solicitor when you're going to be buying a property, particularly if you're going to go to auction or if you're going to be making an offer prior to the auction, even under private treaty scenarios or post-auction, whatever. You really need to inform the occupant. Your conveyancer or your solicitor just looks at the contract. Most of the time, they're busy doing other shit anyway, and they're not getting a lot in comparison to what they would get in handling other matters. That they would get, that demand a lot greater time for. Conveyance pay a bit more attention because that's all they do, is just do conveyancing. But if you're dealing with a solicitor, for goodness sakes, as well as a conveyancer, you need to tell them if you have seen an extension on the house, if the agent is advertising a property and saying, you know, newly renovated and extended, and the boasting and the open house, how wonderful the extension is, and this and that and the other. Well, you got to tell your conveyancer, your solicitor, to chase up the council if you don't do it yourself. To chase up the council and find out if one, they're being approved, two, don't just listen to the selling agent that says, oh yeah, this structure's been here for 20 years. You know, I think it got built 20 years ago, and the current owner bought it off the previous owner as is. And you can see it's still standing, still pretty good. That means nothing unless the selling agent gives you a warranty to say that. Should a neighbour complain, or should the local council give you a demolition order, that they will wear the cost and they will compensate you? Unless they're prepared to do that, it means nothing. And the other thing that you've also got to be mindful of is if in these makeshift renovations that don't have approvals, you're going to have issues with insurance companies should anything happen. Moving forward. So regardless of what the selling agent says, you have really got to look at this more so in the Sydney market and in areas where now you're clocking the average value of a property is, you know, 1.5 something across the board. So yeah, so it's we're not talking buying into a house in the northwestern region for $350,000, $450,000. We're talking about properties upwards, climbing and getting close to the 2 millions, and entry points in some suburbs of Sydney are now 3 million just for the for a shitter on a piece of land, and you're virtually going to demolish and build something else again. So it's not small change that we are talking about, right? And I have been following up those matters in the Blacktown Council with regards to the one of those reports that we did, I think it's November last year, Martin, with that property that got that I questioned the occupation certificate. I questioned DA or the extension to the rear of the property, and our client we didn't proceed with it because there was no DA and there was no occupation certificate. And that's still under investigation. It's only going to be a matter of time before the poor bastard gets told to demolish half the house, and there goes $250,000, if not more. And this is the auction that the property that ran at 1.2 million in Blacktown. And I interviewed, if you recall, I had a small chat with the underbidder, and I asked him the questions if his conveyancer or solicitor had informed him that the half the house didn't have an occupation certificate. And he said no. As a matter of fact, he said words to the effect in that recording. He said, no, but my mortgage broker says it's a great house, I should buy it. I said, mate, you dodged the bullet, because there's no occupation certificate. I mean, it's all in there. It's on one of our shows. So this is where you've got to be extra careful. See, it's an old tip, but look, don't take it for granted. And more to the point, because we're getting into the silly season and the people are just doing things. And I took this solicitor to task today. Without going into too much detail, it was embarrassing for him. But look, it's going to save you a lot of time, it's going to save you a lot of money and a lot of grief in the future.
Spot on. And just to underscore, you can't take what the vendor's survey says as gospel, and you need to do your own due diligence. And specifically, as you say, if there's any evidence of extensions and things, then you need to work out whether in fact that extension is valid, whether it's got the right certification for occupation and it's got the right approvals. Because as you say, if you don't have those things, you can end up repenting at your leisure, to put it very politely, or you basically get a demolition order or whatever it is, or you have to go through a process to try and get it approved retrospectively, all of which is costing time, money and grief. And unfortunately, I see it again and again, where people just take on trust what they're told. The conveyancer does the absolute minimum, but if you read the small print as to what they actually do and what they don't do, unless you specifically push on this point, they will say, well, it's not within our brief, so why would we look at it? So it's really important just to make sure that you do ask those critical questions. And by the way, also, survey, electric testing, gas testing, all of those things, those are elements that you should be doing if you're going to be spending significant amount of money on a property, because if any of those go pear-shaped, you can suddenly find that the value of your property has dropped dramatically.
Look, definitely. Anyway, we'll see what happens moving forward to next week, Martin. It's getting scarier, exciting.
It's not boring, is it, anyone? It's not boring. No. The last thing you can say about it is certainly not boring. So there's always plenty to talk about. I look forward to picking up that with you next week, and I'm sure there'll be some more missives from estate agents and to all of the other things, because that's where that's where obviously all the growth is going to come from. Thanks very much. I look forward to catching up with next week, Edwin. See you later.
All the best.
Cheers. Bye-bye.